Red Eye is 3 hours of alternative politics and culture, broadcast live from 9 until noon every Saturday morning on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM, in Vancouver, Canada.
Mangroves are trees and shrubs that live in tropical tidal zones. Mangrove forests line one quarter of the world's tropical coastlines. The forests provide a barrier between the land and the sea. Now many of those mangrove forests are gone, leaving the shores more vulnerable to the ocean waves. Sand dunes and coral reefs were also part of the ecosystem, each providing a degree of protection from danger coming from the sea. Environmentalists believe that destruction of these natural buffer zones may have increased the devastation caused by last month's tsunamis. Ole Hendrickson holds a PhD in ecology from the University of Georgia. He is with the Ottawa River Institute, and he joins us this morning from Pembroke, Ontario. Good morning, Ole.
Good morning, Chris.
How does a mangrove forest provide protection from the ocean?
Mangroves, as you said, live right at the margins of land and sea. And although they're shallowly rooted in the mud and sand on the shoreline, they're very densely and thickly rooted, and they can stand very high winds and waves as well. So they simply act as a buffer, a shield, when high winds or high waves are coming off the ocean.
And I understand that there's low red mangroves, and then there's taller mangroves as a second layer.
Right. The red mangroves are the ones that are able to grow the furthest out into the water.
Were there areas along the affected coasts where communities were buffered from the worst of the effects by mangrove forests?
There's a very well-known scientist, possibly the best known scientist in India, M.S. Swaminathan, who's world-renowned for his work in breeding wheat varieties that were higher yielding and thereby forestalling famines in Asia and India in particular. And for the past couple decades, he's been a real champion of conservation and restoration of mangroves on the Indian Ocean coast of eastern India. So, yes, there is about half of the remaining mangroves are still on the coast, and they did play a very positive role in dampening the effects of the tsunami.
Why have so many of the mangroves been destroyed?
For multiple reasons. For simply, it's a kind of deforestation, tropical deforestation. It just happens to be coastal forest, but they're cut for simply clearing more land to make cities and resort areas for firewood. But the main cause of mangrove loss in recent years is to create shrimp farming ponds. Mostly for export markets for low-cost shrimp.
And I understand Thailand is the world's biggest shrimp exporter.
Yes, and they've suffered very large losses of their native mangroves for shrimp aquaculture. And it's been supported quite heavily as a economic development initiative in quite a number of countries with funding from major development banks like the World Bank and the Asian Development Bank. So there are some changes. I think there are quite a number of studies coming out now warning about the negative environmental causes of loss of mangroves.
Why is the shrimp industry in particular responsible for so many mangrove forests being lost?
Well, mangrove habitat is ideal for growing shrimp. In fact, intact mangrove forests are shrimp breeding areas in and of themselves. And they tend to be somewhat protected, so it's a good place to cut down some trees and put in a pond. You've got the right brackish water conditions for optimum productivity of shrimp. It's flat. It's easily accessible by boat for harvesting. So it's just an attractive place for aquaculture.
And I understand there's a horizon of about 8 years until the land is too polluted to use again.
It varies, but sometimes it's less than that even, because aquaculture does require inputs of sometimes fertilizer, sometimes even pesticides. There are disease problems. Viruses have attacked some of these shrimp farms and wipe them out, and you simply have to move on then. You can't just keep on going. And that often means moving to a new area of mangroves and clearing them and building a new pond.
Why is tourism incompatible with mangroves?
Well, it really isn't and shouldn't be. I mean, mangrove forests are quite amazing in terms of the wildlife. They're monkeys. Originally were tigers and crocodiles, though those are mostly disappeared, so it's not as dangerous, I guess, for tourists as it used to be. But quite a variety of animals can be seen. You can navigate through them in boats. So there's the possibility of ecotourism, but it's not the conventional kind of tourism that we mostly want to go to the beach and relax. But so it hasn't really been developed that way as much as it could, I suppose.
What happens to local communities when shrimp farms and tourist resorts move into their villages?
Well, that's a very complicated issue, for sure. Sometimes, yes, it's a source of new employment, but sometimes people and their communities are displaced. Traditionally, people have been very dependent on mangroves for fuel wood. You can certainly harvest mangroves sustainably for fuel wood, for fishing, a very convenient place for artisanal fishermen to go out, and it's very convenient, very rich in crabs and native shrimp as opposed to farm shrimp. So those kinds of activities are vulnerable to intensive aquaculture and to tourism development. So there's a trade-off there. Do you want to, how much of this more intensive Western-style development is appropriate in coastal areas?
Another piece of the tropical coastal landscape is the coral reef. What evidence do we have that reefs can help to save lives when disasters like this happen?
Oh, it's very convincing evidence. Coral reefs and mangroves are fairly closely associated in tropical areas. The Maldives off the coast of southern India were in the path of the tsunami waves and were not as affected as Banda Aceh or Sri Lanka were, partly because the coral reefs come up from the bottom and simply dampen the waves before they strike the main part of the island where people live. Coral reefs are extremely important, but they're also extremely endangered right now, both through physical destruction, but now the big threat is climate change and global warming.
What other threats do reefs face? I'm thinking of ports in fishing.
You know, there's a whole suite of pressures, pollution, as you say, development of harbors. In Vietnam, about the major cause of loss of their mangroves was actually the war and spraying of herbicides, deforestation, so that the Viet Cong wouldn't be able to use them as staging grounds. So they lost a big part of their mangroves in southern Vietnam. And around Ho Chi Minh City, there's been some effort to replant and restore mangrove forests. Actually, all around the tropics, it's not really that difficult to get mangroves to come back again. They're very well adapted, in fact, to regenerating after storms, after being cleared. You just start replanting and they'll take off again.
Governments often treat nature conservation as a kind of frill or afterthought in their economic planning processes. How can we encourage them to reframe?
Well, I think this disaster is going to make people think harder about vulnerability of coastal communities and the ecosystem services, as we call them, that are provided by coral reefs and mangroves. And in terms of reducing human suffering and economic losses from natural disasters, a more integrated planning system where you deliberately restrain economic activity near the coastlines, near the mangroves, is just it's common sense from both an economic and an environmental point of view.
Thanks for speaking with me, Ole.
Sure, Chris.
I've been speaking with Ole Hendrickson. He is with the Ottawa River Institute, and he spoke with us this morning from Pembroke, Ontario.
You've been listening to a program produced by Red Eye, an alternative media collective which broadcasts every Saturday morning from 9 until noon on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM, in Vancouver, Canada.